Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. Welcome back. I hope you had a great weekend. I know I did, and enlightening and fulfilling. I'm not sure about you, but let's move forward. You can also get content from reclaimingtherepublic.org as well as mobistrippress.com, and it is dual sponsored by reclaimingtherepublic.org. I want you to know that based on what I have learned from the media and from the research out on all the other shows out there, there is not any other show that purports or asserts to have the constitutional solution. So again, this is the only show on air anywhere that you are going to find the constitutional solution in dealing with federal government overreach. So the content on this show is also interconnected with previous shows and will be tied to other shows. So if you want to stay abreast with the content and understanding what I am talking about regarding the progress we have with getting the Republic reclaimed and taking back the Constitution from the federal government, then you really do need to download these podcasts. And also, another good reason for downloading the podcast is that the content on the show isn't ephemeral. I do go through news concepts and or news in the current news, but the point is that I take a look at it in a constitutional context. That way you can look at the news from a different perspective, because most people just kind of look and examine and want to know motives and so forth. And so it's more important to me that we start looking at things and challenging, you know, why are these things happening? And since when did the federal government have these powers, or how these things are related in the Constitution? I tend to be a little myopic. I've been very focused on one thing and one thing alone, and that is to get the Constitution back into the center of our governance, both at a local, state, as well as our general government or national level, is what a lot of people call it. That being said, if you haven't watched that video of, or if you want to call it the YouTube presentation that I have, the first 30 minutes of this video on YouTube is, I believe, critical. If you want to understand the academic argument as to what the Constitution is and how we diverted from it and what we need to do to get back to it, by all means, go check out that video. It's on you can find the link on my action page, take action page, on reclaimingtherepublic.org. So have a party, have lots of people over, and take a gander at it. I did mention last week, and I did get it up last week, that on my website, on reclaimingtherepublic.org, I do have the bullets on the irrefutable argument for Republic Review, so you can go and download those or what have you. Just remember that those are copyrighted, so it's not for your commercial use, but it's definitely for your reference. The bullets on the model, the same thing. You can pull those in, share those, and so forth. And the model itself, there's a graphic picture there. By all means, take a look, understand, save it, send it out. Get this message out. This along with that presentation, I think they all dovetail each other. And I have a hard time finding anybody that says what I am asserting is impossible or unconstitutional. It doesn't work that way. None of that is true. And so I just want you to understand that there are lots of people. As a matter of fact, every time I look in one direction or another at one institution, one person, one public figure, or what have you, it's very obvious that there is no motivation for fixing something that is making people rich. And so people ask, well, why do you think these people don't care about the solution? Why do you think they, you know, continually do what they're doing, whether they're conservative entertainers or what have you? And I'm the only reason is they're making a lot of money off this problem. And so is that a bad thing for them? No. Is that a bad thing for all of us? Yes, because if this thing actually collapses like everybody believes it will, I believe it will too, then those people, you know, all those people that have really done nothing and done more to protect their market space, there's good, what people call really good institutions that have been around a long time fighting communism and fighting progressivism in our government and so forth. And I cannot understand why they are not taking any action or taking any steps other than the status quo. We got to teach people. We got to get people smart. There's all sorts of people running around with their own little universities, take our courses, and they're making money. I'm not begrudging or besmirching anybody. I'm not trying to poke them in the eye for making money. That's what people need to do to put bread on their table. But as far as I am concerned, all those people, everybody that is conservative minded, that could start getting this and actually supporting Republic Review, and they're not, I would probably say that they got blood on their hands if we actually capitulate before we can do anything about this. And so anyway, I just want you to know that you can go up on the website again and get all that content. And moving forward, as I always do, I actually did check through the news and I looked, and our circumstances have not changed one bit. There is no sign or no news that the federal government is disbanding any of its tyrannical roles, responsibilities, and powers. As with that, I guess we have to, you know, roll up our sleeves and start digging in. And the best people to really dig in, the people we have to motivate to digging in are state legislators. And in all honesty, the only way our state legislators are going to get smart and start digging in is if we can get one group, one state to stand up. And so I'll talk a little bit more about that. But I know this weekend, and I know for the past couple of months, there have been lots of anti-gun marches, and there have been lots of Second Amendment marches, and I still am calling out, and I hope this is the voice of sanity here, and I hope you help resonate this, because this is important that we start taking back the narrative, and the only way to do that is to start calling out the decay of our society's morals. If we do not look at the decay that we're dealing with in our society, then what we are going to continually see is we will continue to see more and more debauchery, more and more, I'll call it, slayings and so forth. We have to take back the narrative. That is, I think, the paramount direction or the paramount issue of the day, taking back the narrative, calling out schools for not taking back prayer, not taking back the essential needs of teaching children how to be moral and how to be good and those types of things. Because right now, what they're teaching them is if you do it, if it feels good, because that's all that counts. Now, I told you there's a problem in Wyoming, and I told you I was going to get into some details on this. In Riverton, Wyoming, it is surrounded by an Indian reservation. And as a matter of fact, the town Riverton was established as like a Homestead Act in 1905. And so just recently, the EPA has gone in there to try to stir the pot. And actually, this really started under the Obama administration. But I'm at a heartbreak. And so with that, I will have to tell you more about this when we get back. So please stay tuned, and I'll be right back after word of our sponsors. Thank you so much. This is G.R. Mobley. The reason the progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost all billionaires in the world are funding a vast array of different groups, and their efforts are to undermine our Republican Constitution. If you don't believe me, Google the donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, and many other state rights, is by you and I and local businesses getting involved and supporting programs based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contributions page, and you can become a listed supporter of Liberty. Thank you. This is G.R. Mobley. I've been on the radio for over a year, and for over a decade, I've been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we are going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument, and most do not like it for money reasons. If you have not read my executive summaries, you need to, so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can pick up my executive summaries, books, and content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you'll know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content. Most of it's free at reclaimingtherepublic.org and mobistrippress.com as well. This way, you can become a part of the solution and not a part of the problem. This is G.R. Mobley. Did you know your overall health is connected to your dental health? And as you get older, this becomes more and more important. If you're like me, going to the dentist can be terrifying. So for me to maintain my dental health and overall health, I need a great dentist and staff who are sensitive to my fear, pain, and even my fear of the cost of dental work. This is why it took me almost 2 years to find a great dentist after I moved here. Bottom line, I need a great dentist just to get into the chair, even for a regular cleaning. This is why I personally recommend Dr. Vaughn Tracy as not only a great dentist, but a patriot and a dentist that cares about your comfort and health. You can find him at VaughnTracyDDS.com. That's VaughnTracyDDS.com. Then you can agree with me, it's great to have a great dentist. Hi, this is G.R. Mobley. If you've listened to my weekly show, Reclaiming the Republic, right here on Red State Talk Radio, every weekday evening from 6 to 7 Eastern and 3 to 4 Pacific, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. It is a hard, fast contract. In accordance to Article 7, the states are the only stakeholders in this contract, and inherent in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight over the contract. This means they can audit the contract against the general government and the unconstitutional powers they are exercising. Any single state can perform this audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what I refer to as Republic Review. Please read my executive summary on reclaimingtherepublic.org to learn the details about Republic Review. Thank you. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue. So anyway, as I was talking about Riverton, Wyoming, the EPA has decided to get involved in siding with the Indians regarding the legality of the 1905 Act that actually parsed up this Indian, or it was for homestead purposes, parsed up this land that wasn't being utilized because it's a large chunk of land of Wyoming that has been set aside for this Indian reservation. Anyway, the details are kind of interesting because the question I have, and this kind of lends to the new question, where or what is the federal government's responsibility in the management of Indians, Indian lands, and so forth? And so I want to ask you, if you want to call in and you have some insights as to what the constitutional role of the federal government is in the management of Indians and Indian land, reservations, and so forth, I would love to hear from you. I'd like you to call in so that we can talk about this, because I think that most people don't understand what is constitutional and what is constitutional. You got to start separating those two terms from what the federal government is doing. Just because the federal government is doing it doesn't mean it's constitutional. You know what I mean? So anyway, I can't tell you why, and I have no idea and understand why the states continue to put up with bullying from unconstitutional entities like the Parks Department, Forest Department of Interior, BLM, and so forth. And that's why we really need a state to stand up. I mean, what kind of motivation do states need? What, I mean, if you get, somebody pushing on you and actually poking you in the chest or what have you, is that enough motivation for you to, get involved and start, defending yourself? Or do you just cower? Has America and have the states become an entity that must cower and must, subject itself to the general government or to our federal government? Don't think so. I don't think that's how the Constitution was intended, and I don't think that's what the stakeholders had ratified. And so that kind of leads me into a little bit of focus for today. And so I have mentioned this before, and I'm going to talk about it again because it's important. So I can't just tell you to go listen to my podcast. The Constitution's a contract. You hear me say this all the time. And if you and I had a contract and I asked you, this is the metaphor, this is how I like to set this up. I'm going to ask you to become my landscaper. And you are going to do the best job you possibly can. I'm hiring you. And this is the terms of the contract. Your job is to make my yard the most beautiful yard, and not only just on my street, not only in my community, but in the town. I want to have the most breathtaking yard in the entire town, and I don't care what it takes. You do whatever you need to do to make my yard beautiful, the most beautiful. Okay, so I go to work. I'm a single guy, and I come home, and lo and behold, I see some real improvements, some new, bushes and other things and all sorts of prep going on. And I'm going, yeah, this is good. I'm glad I did this. And then I go into my home, and lo and behold, inside my house is nothing but lawn care, landscaping, hardware, gear, all sorts of stuff. And all my household goods are gone. They're not in my house. And I start looking, and I see in my backyard, my sofa, my TV, all my household goods are now in my backyard. So I call you up and I say, hey, what the heck are you doing? You have no right to do this. And then you come right back to me and you say, well, look, you told me I could do whatever I needed to do to make your lawn and your yard the most beautiful. Well, having all my equipment inside your house makes it easier for me to do that. And I don't want to get it damaged and leave it outside in the weather and just leave it there. So, and somebody could steal it. So I've just decided to put it inside your house so I could make it your house the most beautiful in all the town. Bottom line, I gave that person a very ambiguous contract. Very ambiguous. As a matter of fact, there was no debating. I just gave you the license of being able to do all sorts of things to my home that I obviously didn't understand the consequences of. Well, I am telling you that the framers didn't do that. They did not create an ambiguous contract. As a matter of fact, I've said this before, it is enumerated and very limited to, and what does enumerated mean? It means it was listed with the powers that were delegated, and only those powers that were delegated. And So let me back up a little bit more. Again, we're talking about a contract, right? And so let's say I come to you and I want to get another contract with you because you are the best landscaper. And I say, okay, well, let bygones be bygones. Fortunately, it didn't rain and my stuff got hurt and we were able to clean things up. But I still want to get this contract ironed out. And I tell you that I would like you to, you know, keep my lawn trimmed. And we start going through a very listed or enumerated contract of telling you what you can do. And maybe even limit, you know, at the very end, saying some things you can't do, like you can't leave your stuff there, you know, that type of thing. Anyway, as you look at something and you say, hey, you know, because you're going to be the guy that's going to have to execute this. And you say, I read this line here to say that I can mow your lawn in any direction, that you're not basically telling me I have to mow it lengthwise. I can do the width as well. And I say, you're absolutely correct. I just expect you to mow my lawn. It doesn't matter the direction of the mowing. And so what we just did, what you and I had just done, is we actually made an amendment to the contract by further defining what one line meant. Isn't that interesting? Well, what happens is in an amendment, or when you're discussing, ratifying, or going through a contract to understand the terms of the contract, and you discuss it and you define it, that makes that definition, because we both agree on what that definition was, legally binding, without having to open up the contract and saying, okay, you need to put that into the contract. It can be verbal. It's nice to have it in writing. And guess what? The framers were smart enough to actually put all of this stuff in writing. So one of the problems that we have faced with the Constitution is this little concept called the Necessary and Proper Clause. Because in Article 1, Section 18, it basically states, this is the kind of the wrap-up of all these enumerated powers. And I want you to understand why this is here and why it's not somewhere else. To make all laws which shall be necessary and proper for carrying into execution the foregoing power. So, in other words, from subsection 1 to subsection 17, those are the enumerated powers that the federal government or the general government was given in the Constitution. No more, no less. These are the powers that Congress has. And so right there, it is just saying that they can make necessary and proper laws for carrying out the execution of the foregoing laws. So when you hear this, well, we can do anything that's necessary and proper. No, 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 no. You can only do things that are necessary and proper as it is pertaining and in context to those enumerated powers. So it goes on and says, and all other powers vested by this Constitution in the government of the United States. So in other words, if you look at Article 14, there are some powers that are kind of granted, Article 4, I mean, or in an amendment. Let's say something comes along and we delegate a new power to the federal government. I'm up on a hard break, but if we delegate new powers to the federal government, then guess what? That means that they can write laws necessary and proper to the execution of those powers delegated. And I'm going to continue on this when we get back from our break. I'll be right back after a word from our sponsors. Thank you so much. My show, Reclaiming the Republic, is more than an educational show. My intent is also to work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is result-oriented and is live across the Republic. Download and share our podcast. Like, follow, and share our page, Mobius Strip Press, and the articles and content posted on our Facebook page. Get informed about groups in the local area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests podcast to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you. This is G.R. Mobley. I'm working with Trevor Lawton, Douglas V. Gibbs, Tom DeWeese, John Hancock, and many other good patriots in setting up rodeos for Republic Review this summer. We're doing this in Wyoming, Utah, South Dakota, Idaho, Kansas, and North Dakota for this election cycle. If you are beginning to understand the power of Republic Review, then we need your help one way or another. More importantly, if you live in these states or know any patriotic leadership, whether that's an elected official, grassroots leader, or political leader, please reach out to me on Facebook or email me at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And let me know who we can work with in organizing these events. It is our intent to get one and hopefully all of these states to call for Republic Review. If we can get this started, I promise you we will make America great once and for all. Thank you. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive of businesses who are supporting to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on Red State Talk Radio. Thank you. This is G.R. Mobley. I've been on the radio for over a year, and for over a decade, I've been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we are going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument, and most do not like it for money reasons. If you have not read my executive summaries, you need to, so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can pick up my executive summaries, books, and content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you'll know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content. Most of it's free at reclaimingtherepublic.org and mobistrippress.com as well. This way, you can become a part of the solution and not a part of the problem. That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's, and if you're ready to call in, the lines are open. And so right when we went to the break, I was reading the Necessary and Proper Clause. And so what I want to do as well is let me read the Supremacy Clause. And so it says that this is in Article 6 of the Constitution, and this is Section 2. This Constitution and the laws of the United States, which shall be made in pursuance thereof, which means here you got the Constitution, and any law made based upon the Constitution itself, thereof, and all treaties made, not just all treaties, but they have to be ratified by two-thirds, because that's what's considered an accepted treaty. If it hasn't been accepted, then it is not a ratified treaty. So it doesn't matter if there's a treaty out there that we never signed off on, we're not held to that. Only to those ratified treaties, or which shall be made. And so let me continue on. The Constitution and the laws of the United States, which shall be made in pursuance thereof, and all treaties made, or which shall be made under the authority of the United States, shall be the supreme law of the land. And so, in other words, let's say the government decides to make a law about health care. Well, is that within the Constitution? Is that within any treaty that we have made with some foreign land that was ratified by two-thirds of the Senate? No. In other words, there is no jurisdiction, there is no power, therefore the law pertaining to Obamacare or anything of health care, Health and Human Services, that entire department is unconstitutional. Clearly, they've taken a lot of latitude. I wanted to read that because the Supremacy Clause and the Necessary Proper Clause, which I was just reading before we went to break, are the two clauses that become huge portals for progressives and or big government nationalists that try to centralize power into the federal government. Those are the two clauses that they love to use. And so back to the ratification debates now. As I was talking at the very beginning, if we start discussing something with, you know, pertaining to the contract, then that becomes legally binding. Well, guess what? These ratification debates were deeply discussed and even heatedly discussed. As a matter of fact, there was no love lost between and the antics that were actually played in the ratification debates is very interesting. I forget the gentleman who made some, you know, outrageous bowing to, and it was mocking Patrick Henry, really, who crossed the line, especially in those days, because Patrick Henry could have just called this kid out to a duel and said, you know, are you insulting my honor? Then I want to defend myself in the proper way of a duel. And so keep things in context, how life was back then. And so these men, and that's why they were very, very careful not to be insinuating impugning the character or the honor and integrity of an individual. They had to dance around that unless you were ready to go to a duel. But anyway, so these ratification debates that were actually going on when they were discussing these types of issues, very specifically these clauses and all these different powers, the direct tax and so forth, it's very important to understand that there were a lot of personal dynamics in this. And so reading the ratification debates is not necessarily the easiest, especially when I want to cite these things, because there are lots of words. Because what ends up happening is oration, you know, does not lend to brevity. There were many times when Patrick Henry would get up and he would speak most of the day, and or others would get up. And so they weren't trying to save ink and pages. And so if you look at the Federalist Papers, and the reason why I like using the Federalist Papers, even though they're not really considered quote unquote founding documents, these were just basically articles that were answering and explaining the Constitution. And yes, I will say that the Federalist Papers did assist in helping to define the Constitution. The Federalist Papers are not legally binding. It wasn't testimony during the ratification debates that was used in establishing what the Constitution meant and the fact that those terms were accepted and codified, or actually not codified, but galvanized to the contract. And so it's really important to understand this relationship that the ratification debates actually have with the Constitution, because most everybody that is talking about the Constitution today does not understand that, and they do not get this importance. And when you really put it down into this context, nobody can argue against me. There's absolutely no argument that when it comes down to contract law, if the parties in question over the contract discussed and agreed upon something very specific, then that became legally binding. And I will tell you, and I've said this before, John Marshall was a participant in the Virginia ratification debates, and he scuttled them, and he made sure that he did not reference them. So let me get into this comment here that I want to get into. And let me see, this is Mr. George Nichols, and he's replying about the dreaded clause. And he says, this dreaded clause runs in the following words, and now he quotes, to make laws which shall be necessary and proper for carrying into execution the foregoing powers and all other powers vested by, and he emphasizes vested by, this Constitution in the government of the United States or in any department or officer thereof. The committee will perceive that the Constitution and enumerated all the powers which the general government should have, but did not say how they were to be exercised. It therefore, in this clause, tells that they shall be exercised. Does this give any power? I say not. Suppose it had been inserted at the end of every power that they should have the power to make laws and carry that power into execution. Would this have increased their powers? If, therefore, it could have been increased their powers, if placed at the end of each power, it cannot increase them at all. The clause only enables them to carry into execution the powers given to them, but gives them no additional power. But it is objected to for the want of Bill of Rights. And I'm going to inject here real quick. George Mason was harping and harping and harping for a Bill of Rights. He wanted to basically get the words that were said. We want exclusivity, that those things that were not exclusively granted, you know, to be reserved to the states, just like it had in the Articles of Confederation. So moving on, it is a principle universally agreed upon that all powers not given are retained, by where the Constitution, the general government, has general powers for any purpose. Its powers are absolute. Where it has powers with some exceptions, they are absolute only to those exceptions. In either case, the people retain what is not conferred on the general government as it is by their positive grant that it has any of its powers. In England, all disputes between the king and the people reoccurrence, it had the enumerated rights of the people to determine, are the rights in dispute secured? Are they included in Magna Carta, Bill of Rights, etc.? If not, they are generally speaking when the king's prerogative in disputes between Congress and the people, the reverse of the proposition holds. It is disputed right, is the disputed right enumerated? If not, Congress cannot meddle with it. And that's exactly what I've been telling you. I'm going to reread this last part. Is the disputed right, health care, enumerated in the Constitution? If not, Congress cannot meddle with it. Let me say this again. Is the disputed right towards the infrastructure management of the United States within the Constitution? If not, Congress cannot meddle with it and create a Department of Transportation. Are you starting to get this? The necessary and proper clause, as he was basically saying, is that what they could have done was they could have taken that clause and just got rid of it and then added to each power. And let me pull the Constitution back up and I'll just read one of the short powers thereof. And so that would be, let me see here. That's Article 4. We were just in that. Article 1, Section 8. And let's just say this one, to establish post offices and post roads. Had they just put to establish post offices and post roads and the necessary laws, necessary and proper laws in executing this power. That's what he was basically saying, that the whole necessary and proper clause of 18 was just, instead of redundantly putting that little phrase at the end of each of these powers, they just summarized it at the basic end of all of these enumerated powers. I hope that makes sense. If it doesn't, call, because I'm going to go on in this because there's a lot more good information, but I'm up at a hard break. So I will be right back after a word from our sponsors. Thank you so much.
This is G.R. Mobley. Most of you understand the importance of having strategic goals. But do you have a long-term strategic goal for your dental health? Too many people are only focused on whitening their smile. I understand the appearance of teeth can give you confidence, but this can risk your future health in only addressing the cosmetics of your teeth. And many dentists will take your money to do this. They say failing to plan is planning to fail. And if you don't have a long-term strategy, you need a new dentist. Every dentist provides a dental plan, but Dr. Tracy and his staff develops a strategy to help you maintain or restore your dental health to what it needs to be. To develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health, connect with Dr. Tracy at VonTracyDDS.com. That's VonTracyDDS.com. So you too can develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive of businesses who are supporting to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on Red State Talk Radio. Thank you. This is G.R. Mobley. The reason the progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost all billionaires in the world are funding a vast array of different groups, and their efforts are to undermine our Republican Constitution. If you don't believe me, Google the donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, and many other state rights, is by you and I and local businesses getting involved and supporting programs based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contributions page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty. Thank you. Hi, this is G.R. Mobley. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, these conventions require states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. These conventions are unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to get my executive summary on Republic Review and listen to Reclaiming the Republic right here on Red State Talk Radio every weekday evening from 6 to 5 Eastern and 3 to 4 Pacific. Thank you. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
I'll even say this, that if you actually start putting, you know, the big picture together and you understand that if the federal government was complying to the Constitution, most all of our problems would go away, because it's the federal government that dictated evolution in school. It's the federal government that said you can't pray in school. It's the federal government that said you can't have the Bible or reference Christ or have any reference of Christianity in our school system. If you're starting to get the big picture, you should start to understand that getting the federal government into compliance with the Constitution has to be the most paramount, our number one goal as a society, compliance to the Constitution. Now, let me get back into these debates. George Mason comes right back after Mr. Nichols talks, and he says, "Mr. Chairman, gentlemen, say there is no new power given by this clause. Is there anything in this Constitution which secures to the state the powers which are said to be retained? Will powers remain to the states which are not expressly guarded and reserved? I will suppose a case. Gentlemen may call it an impossible case and suppose that Congress will act with wisdom and integrity. Among the enumerated powers, Congress are to lay and collect taxes, duties, imposts, and excises, and to pay the debts, to provide for the general welfare and common defense, and that by the clause, so often called the sweeping clause, they are to make laws necessary to execute those laws. Now suppose oppressions should arise under this government, and any writer should dare to stand forth and expose to the community at large the abuses of those powers. Could not Congress, under the idea of providing for the general welfare and under their own construction, say, now is this not prophetic? I love this man. Anyway, under the idea of providing for the general welfare and under their own construction, say that this was destroying the general peace, encouraging sedition, and poisoning the minds of the people, and they could not, in any order to provide against this, lay a dangerous restriction on the press? Might they not even bring the trial of this restriction within the 10-mile square where there is no prohibition against it? Might they not thus destroy the trial by jury? Would they not extend their implication? It appears to me that they may and will and shall the support of our rights depend on the bounty of men whose interest it may be to oppress us, that Congress should have power to provide for the general welfare of the Union, I grant, but I wish a clause in the Constitution with respects to all powers which are not granted, that they are retained by the states. Otherwise, the power providing for the general welfare may be perverted to its destruction. Is that not prophetic? I mean, eventually they may look at what yours truly here is saying as seditious and or coming and saying, well, you're causing problems and we have to shut that down. Anyway, he was right, because in the strict construction of the Constitution, that cannot happen. However, with the with great latitude and great perversion, we have gotten to a point where the federal government has done all sorts of things that are outside the bounds of the enumerated power, well outside those bounds. And it began in 1849 it was 1853 when they created the Department of Interior. And that was the beginning of the federal government basically subjugating the states by creating little vestiges and little hooks into the states. And if you look at the western states and how much land, unconstitutional land, is being grabbed and abused by the federal government, then I think you can start understanding it didn't take that long for them to start doing these things. Anyway, this is Mr. Nichols that follows up, and he says, now, Nichols said the first part, Mason retorted, and now this is Nichols. And he says, the clause, which was affectedly called the sweeping clause, contained no new grant of power. To illustrate this position, he observed that if it had been at the end of every one of the enumerated powers, instead of being inserted at the end of it, it would be obvious to anyone that it was no augmentation of power. If, for instance, and I didn't read that part for what I think that was Henry that admitted that if you put it at the end, that it would then be, you know, everybody would notice that. But anyway, he goes on and says, it would be obvious to anyone that it was no augmentation of power. If, for instance, at the end of the clause granting power to lay and collect taxes, it had been added that they should have power to make necessary and proper laws to lay and collect taxes, who could suspect it to be an addition of power, as it would grant no new power if inserted at the end of the clause? It could not be subjoined to the whole. And in context to the enumerations and that final listing, that's precisely why they put it there, instead of adding it to all 17 lines or subsections of Section 1, or Section 8, Article 1, Section 8, because it's subsection 18 that created this sweeping clause that basically applied it to all of the clauses above. It didn't create a new portal. And that's why I'm going to go back to Madison's veto of the bonus bill. I went through that probably a week, 2 weeks ago. And if you look, Madison clearly states that the necessary and proper clause, the supremacy clause, the commerce clause, and the general welfare and defense clauses, all four of these clauses only pertain to the enumerated powers. They are not portals for the general government to grant upon itself any new power. The only process for the federal government to come and create the Department of Interior, the Department of Agriculture, the Department of Justice, the Department of Commerce, the Department of Health and Human Services, the Department of Education, the Department of Energy, the Department of Homeland Security, and so forth and so on. There are 12 departments and there are hundreds of offices, administrations, and so forth. And all of those, for them to be constitutional, require that the federal government, the Congress, pass by two-thirds of each house. In other words, they approve by two-thirds of each house an amendment first to go to the states, requesting the states to delegate that authority to them. In 1926, the Congress, with two-thirds of both houses, and as a matter of fact, President Coolidge, who was actually a big union guy and a big supporter of, you know, labor, organized labor and so forth, signed the amendment. He didn't sign it. He promoted it because presidents don't sign it. But under Coolidge's watch, he said, make an amendment and let's send it out and we'll promote this thing. And they made an amendment to grant the federal government the ability to regulate child labor, not all labor. They were very specific and say, we want to make sure that, you know, we regulate and ensure the safety and health and welfare of children, that because this was the beginning of what they were calling child abuse, that making kids learn chores and going out and working the farm or even working in factories where kids were not getting their education. Instead of supporting their family, they went to learn in the factories and so forth. And so Congress and the, I don't want to say, I guess it was the progressive movement back then, as well as the religious movement, because they were kind of entwined at that point in time, because that was also around the time of Prohibition. And so anyway, where big government starts regulating and taking away your liberties and so forth. But anyway, the federal government passed this amendment of the Department of Labor, or to grant them this Department of Labor. The states rejected it, wholeheartedly rejected it, because they said, who are you to get in our knickers and dictate to us how we should oversee our citizens? Our citizens are very well attuned to what we are doing, and if we have problems, then the citizenry will help us guide that by the election process, and we will continue to manage and maintain this, you know, these roles, responsibilities, and powers for ourselves. So the question is, how is it that the federal government created the Department of Labor in less than 10 years? They didn't get an amendment to do this. And clearly, through the ratification debates and everything that Madison had been saying, is that the federal government must amend the Constitution for it to be constitutional. Even the Constitution says that. If it is to be done, and as Nichols says right here, as it would grant no new power if inserted at the end of the clause, it would not be subjoined to the whole. Actually, the one I really like was the one before that, when he said that, is the disputed right enumerated? If not, Congress cannot meddle with it, period. And so if it's not enumerated, such as labor, such as energy, and all of these things I've been listing, my friends, then it's unconstitutional and Congress has no power over it. If you don't like that, that's okay. That's okay. The federal government and the Constitution has a process for us to grant them new powers, roles, and responsibilities. But you cannot allow anybody to steal from you your liberties and rights and powers. which is what has been happening. And with that, I'm GR Mobley. I'm out of here for the day. We'll talk about this some more tomorrow. God bless.